BonnevilleInternational.com. This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. I have two guests today. I have on the phone, we have Julie Weeks, who is the CEO of Women Able, and you can find her at womenable.com. Julie, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be there.
And in studio with me, I have Judy Bratt, CEO of Summit Insight, whose book is out, Government Contracts Made Easier. Welcome.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Mark.
Julie, let's start with a little background on you and your organization, Women Able. Please.
Women Able was founded almost 6 years ago by myself. The mission of Women Able is to enable women's entrepreneurship all around the world by essentially working with the stewards of women's entrepreneurship, which are lawmakers, other policymakers, non-governmental organizations, to gather, share knowledge, and improve the systems that support women's enterprise.
Okay, so 6 years old. Judy, a little background on you. You and Summit Insight, please.
Sure. For the last 23 years, I've been helping companies win government business. Since 2003, I've been CEO of Summit Insight, strategic advisors for government contracts. And I help establish companies who are taking their first step or expanding their footprint into government business.
There you go. And Julie, what did you do before you founded Women Able, please?
Yeah, I'd like to add that Judy and I have known each other for quite a long time. Prior to launching my business, I was had a couple of stints in the federal government, first in the Small Business Administration's Office of Advocacy, and secondly as the Executive Director of the National Women's Business Council. And in between those two stints, I was the Director of Research at the Center for Women's Business Research. So Judy and I have known each other in Washington, D.C. policy circles for quite a long time.
You know my friend Kathy Corman Frye by any chance?
I certainly do.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you see her, tell her Amtower says hey.
I will. Cool. I will.
I love the Hot Mamas Project. That's very, very, very good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So early this year, Judy sent me a study for, and it really pissed me off that she had to send it to me because I've been an American Express member for like 3 decades. She sends me this American Express study on small businesses, and it was some really cool stuff, and it was a three-parter, and it was put together by this woman named Julie Weeks, who did it for Amex. How did you hook up with Amex first?
I've known them for quite a long time because they've been involved in women's enterprise development for quite a number of years, and their whole focus is on helping small businesses grow. And I think they realized about a year and a half, 2 years ago, that one key avenue for growth was getting more businesses thinking about selling goods and services to the federal government. And so they launched a program to do that, a Victory in Procurement program, which brings together a number of different players, Women Impacting Public Policy, Teaming USA, and they're doing seminars around the country to try to dispel some of the myths and show some of the success strategies. And as a part of that, they wanted to understand, you know, what women and men small business owners were going through, both those who were still knocking at the door trying to get into federal contracting, but perhaps more importantly, taking a look and talking to some of the businesses that have been successful to find out, you know, what some of the keys to success have been. And
okay.
So that's how this study was born.
Okay. And how did you hook, but you said you've been doing stuff with them for a while. Did they just, did they bid out doing the research on this, or did they just say you knew what you were doing, so go for it?
Well, yeah, they asked a couple of questions, and I assume they were asking other people questions, too, but I think they must have liked the answers that I was giving them. So they said, well, what would it cost to do a study like this? And I told them, and we went forward. And as you say, it's turned into three different research reports, each of which focuses on a slightly different aspect of federal contracting. And I think, you know, for a relatively small study, it's uncovered quite a lot of insight. So I'm quite proud of the work that's come out of it, and I think it's been very successful in sharing some of the, you know, not only the success strategies, but quantifying some of the investments that business owners are having to make to get into federal contracting.
The quantifying side, I know, is something that intrigues Ms. Bratt. Judy, there's been a lot of myths around the market, and one of the things this study did was endorse some of them, but quantify them.
Exactly right. I mean, I talked to thousands of companies right across the United States, as well as some Canada and worldwide, about what success takes when you want to win government contracts. And right out of the box, the stat that I found incredibly gratifying was something that quantified something that I knew anecdotally from talking to thousands of companies in every sector: how long it takes to win that first government contract. And that is always the number that just gets everybody in the class that I'm teaching perked up, if their eyes don't just pop open.
You're talking to 12 to 24.
That's right. I'd been saying 18 to 24 months for years and years, and Julie's research popped the number of 19.6 months mean average, bang right in the middle. And I went, yes, I am not making this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I mean, we've watched it for years and years. But the reason I use 12 to 24 is I work with a number of product companies as well, and sometimes it's easier to ramp them than it is a services company. Not always.
And certainly an average means there's quite a bit of dispersion. Some people can hit it lucky, and for other people, and both of you know, they can try and try, but they're not either not going about it the right way, or they're not finding the right customer for what they have to sell. So it can take a short time, it can take a longer time. But on average, you're right, it's about 20 months.
Well, the biggest issue that I've run across for years and years is, even when I get C-level buy-off on the 12 to 24, 18 to 24, 24 plus, in 3 months they call and say, we don't have any sales yet. and it happens, more often than not. So,
one of the findings of this study actually was that, there were a lot of people who were registered on CCR, the Central Contractor Registry, and they were not getting federal contracts. And as we all know, that's a license to hunt. It's not, people are not going to knock on your door. And the difference between those who were active federal contractors in this study and those who were inactive, meaning they might have had one contract in the past, was the level of activity in bidding. I mean, those who are more successful are more active in the bidding process.
Well, we're going to get into the details of that, but there's bidding, and then there's bidding. There's filling in the blanks, and then there's understanding the customer needs. So it's a radically different situation. Mm-hmm. Judy, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, one of the things, Julie, I'd be really interested in your take on this. One of the things that I was interested in was the level of activity of bidding, the number of bids that successful contractors make, because I was thinking about that, and activity doesn't necessarily equal progress. The thing that I was interested in was the idea that companies that are succeeding make a lot of proposals, but talk to me about the win rate, because the concern that I had was that companies that were getting started were making lots of proposals, but that their win rates could be low, and therefore their cost, especially starting out, could be higher than they needed to be.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And bidding is only, as you say, one of the kinds of activities. We also asked what else they were doing to try to get into the federal procurement market. And there's a lot of activity in going to seminars, meeting with procurement officials, attending matchmaking meetings. So that you have to do a whole lot more than just bid. which we all know, but those who are more successful are actually more active in doing all of those things. And they're exploring, they're researching, they're getting to know agency procurement officials, they're going to their OSDBU offices. the sessions. Yeah.
The relationship factor is huge. We're going to get into that and delve deeper into the study on the next segment. My guests today are Julie Weeks of WomenAble.com, and in studio I have Judy Bratt, who is the CEO of Summit Insights. So you can find Julie at WomenAble.com, one word, and Judy Bratt at SummitInsight.com. When we come back, we are going to take a deep dive into this study. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arinc.
Congress has authorized the Pentagon to spend nearly $160 billion on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan with no major restrictions on operations. This year's approved legislation includes $725 billion in defense programs, $158 billion for overseas combat. Among its provisions, a 1.4% pay raise for troops and a guarantee that children of service members can remain covered under their military's TRICARE program until they're 26. I'm J.J. Green.
When you fly over the North Pole, do you ever think about how remote you are? Arinc does, and that's why they have it covered. They're the only company in the world that provides high-frequency data links so that pilots can always communicate with someone on the ground. Arinc ensures you're never alone at 35,000 feet. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint? What is the U.S. Navy doing to strengthen its information dominance? And how are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune into the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Even Santa might be interested in the aerodynamics of flexible materials, say to optimize the reins on his sleigh or the jump ropes he carries in his sack. The precise motions of jump ropes are being captured on film in the lab of Princeton University mechanical and aerospace engineer Howard Stone. Findings on how air-induced drag shapes the rope could provide competitive benefits.
Give someone the length of rope that will offer them the least resistance if they're trying to do it as fast as they can.
And may also point to interesting effects on long, flexible, rope-like structures in both engineering and nature.
They're important for anything like the flexing of airplane wings, which flex under flow to the shape of a tree in the wind.
And even the extremely long cables used in deep-sea drilling. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Mark Amtower, and my new book, Selling to the Government, deals with a topic that other books avoid, why most companies fail, and how you and your company can win. My 3 decades' experience and my extensive network of trusted experts make Selling to the Government the most comprehensive book available on doing business with Uncle Sam. It's available at Amazon, at any online bookstore, and coming soon to your local Barnes & Noble. Buy your copy today and drop me a line to let me know what you think. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Julie Weeks, who is the CEO of WomenAble.com, and Judy Bratt, CEO of SummitInsight.com, and we're discussing the American Express Open study on strategies for small businesses winning government contracts. And there, it was a three-part study, and the first study came out very early this year, and the quick facts on the front page of this study are: what are the two most important pieces of advice that successful small business contractors offer? Active contractors are more successful in contract performance in part because they are more active in the bidding process. Number three, federal procurement success takes both time and money. And number four, getting on GSA schedule can be another avenue for procurement. So let's start with number one. Julie, two most important pieces of advice, please.
Yes, these are among those who are active federal contractors, meaning they're performing right now or within the past couple of years on a contract, and they're saying that, don't go after multi-million dollar contracts first. Start small and work your way up. Secondly, that if at first you don't succeed, keep on trying. We had spoken in the previous segment that it takes a year and a half to 2 years to get that first contract, so don't give up after the first couple of times. Just keep trying. And the fact about the small, starting small and working your way up, Judy, you probably know more than anybody with a lot of the companies that you're working with that you've got to have past performance to start kind of getting into those larger contracts. And starting small and getting a successful performance is very important for future success, wouldn't you say?
I would. The thing I found really interesting from this first study was not just the average 20 months that takes, but the statistic that takes $86,124 per year on that road to success. And, I don't do math in public for just anybody, but I'm going to do it for you, Mark and Julie. I mean, so let's work in round numbers. Let's say 20 months and then round down that two-year investment to $160,000. So does your company have another $8,000 a month on average to shell out every month for 20 months without any return at all? Think, people. And that expenditure isn't going to be linear. This time of year, first quarter costs can be low as agencies are breathing on the fumes of continuing resolution trying to get their money. But there's eventually going to be a huge surge in marketing money. So you got financing to cover that? That's a huge issue. So many of the companies that I talk to don't even think about whether they can extend a line of credit or can they get more working capital. And that shows up in so many aspects of your study, Julie, that takes money to make money. Peace.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that average $86,000 a year investment not only includes cash outlay, but the staff time that it takes to kind of hunt down opportunities, meet with people, and that sort of thing. So it's not an insignificant amount of money. And but those who are more successful and have a larger level of federal contracts invest more. So, you can start small and work your way up with in terms of investing, too, your time and money. But you're right, Judy, that there's a kind of a minimum amount of time and attention that you need to pay in order to be successful. That's for sure.
Cool.
And, Julie, you were talking about the two most important pieces of advice that active contractors give, and I like those, the start small and the be persistent. But there's one other aspect of the research that shows up, and I think that's even more powerful. And you looked at the top reasons, the top motivating factors that successful companies cite for entering the federal market. Mm-hmm. And I pull this when I teach, what's your top reason? And people say, the government has to set aside contracts for my kind of business, or I could use some cash, or I want to offset the business cycle. Nice ideas, but the successful company, 70% of successful companies cite one of two reasons for going into this market. Either first, selling to the government is aligned with their plans to grow the company.
Right.
Or they have found a solid fit between what they do and a need of a specific agency. So those are good clues to, are you going into this market for the right reasons? And that's so important.
Absolutely. If you're going in because you've heard that, the adage that government is a good client because it pays regularly, that's not the right reason. And you're right that those who are active contractors, that's, the fourth of four reasons that they give. And the primary one is that it's a conscious growth strategy for my business. And secondarily, as you say, I have found the agency or agencies that are buying what I have to sell. And that's very important.
Exactly right. Good luck with the government has lots of money. You have to have enough money to pursue the business, win the business, perform the business, and stay in business until after you submit your invoice and it's done right and the government pays you. And that's something people forget.
Julie, let me ask a question here. Anecdotally or by questions through the survey, do you have any feedback on how that $86,000 is spent? I know a good portion of it is internal resources, but what external resources are the companies looking for?
Now, we didn't ask directly in terms of how does that investment parse out, but we did find out that among the activities that business owners are pursuing in order to get contracts is attending meetings or seminars, going to matchmaking events, meeting with agency officials, attending a class put on by, you know, their business association or some an external consultant like Judy who's putting on classes, that sort of thing. So those are part, that's part of the investment that they're making.
Okay.
As well as, of course, all the, you know, fees that they may have to pay to, if they have to get bonded or, you know, other licensing that they may have to do depending on their industry. It's all wrapped into that.
Staff time is not free either.
So, staff time is certainly included in that investment. We asked, you know, not just cash outlay, but your staff time as well.
Now, what about the second point in this? The active contractors are more successful in contract performance in part because they're more active in the bidding process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're making a lot more bids. During we asked during a 3-year period how many bids did you participate in, and over that 3-year period, nearly 20 bids were made by active contractors. Only 5 were made by inactive contractors. Also, we asked if they participated in a bid as a subcontractor to a larger company, and active contractors are more likely to be involved in participating as subcontractors, too. Among this population, over the past 3 years, an average of 8 bids they've participated in as a subcontractor.
Well, Julie, when I looked at that, and I wanted to be really careful that I got the numbers right and understood them, so I want to ask you, 20 proposals, what did that translate into for a success rate? Because I also survey that when I do classes and webinars. These active, successful contractors, what is their success rate? And does that differ by women, minorities, and overall average?
It actually does differ a little bit by ethnic group. It does not differ by gender, interestingly enough. Women are as successful a kind of batting average, if you want to call it that, as men do. Minorities have to take more times at bat in order to get a successful contract win. On average, and again, this is a very wide range. It's not only long-time, very experienced contractors and those who are relatively recent in their contract success, but the average batting rate, average over that 3-year period is 410, if you're going to put it in baseball terms. So 41% of the time that they're bidding, they are succeeding.
That's the average for all small businesses?
That's the average for this 3-year period of 2007 through 2006 through 2009, because we did the survey in 2010, looking back 3 years. And then the difference between women and men, 40% for men, 43% for women, so women a tad more successful, 39% for business owners of color. So those are the differences. Not a tremendous amount, but if you're also taking a look at the amount of investment being made, minority business owners are having to make a larger investment. That average that we talked about a minute ago, $86,000 a year, is $108,000 a year for business owners of color.
Cool. My guests today are Julie Weeks, the CEO of WomenAble.com, and Judy Bratt of Summit Insight, SummitInsight.com. When we come back, we're going to continue to take a deeper look at the American Express Open study on small business success in the government market. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees, NARF wants you to know that laws can change and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best retirement investment.
I'm Police Officer Sergeant Goodwin. I've been looking into a report of thieves operating in this area. We have now located their hideout, and it's at your local bank. The banks are robbing you blind.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. He's right. If you've got a mortgage, your bank is stealing from you because a typical monthly mortgage payment is 90% or more interest. And over the life of a 30-year mortgage, that can cost you a fortune. It should be illegal. But there's a proven way to eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. To prove it, let me send you a copy of my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-700-3013. Stop getting robbed of your money and future. Get my powerful Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-700-3013 for your free copy of my Live Debt-Free CD. Call 1-800-700-3013.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is Special Agent in Charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Judy Bratt, CEO of Summit Insight, and Julie Weeks of WomenAble.com. And you can find Judy at SummitInsight.com, and you can find her book there too, and probably on Amazon as well. Government Contracts Made Easier. And you can find Julie at womenable.com. Let's one last part on that first study. It said, and I'm interested first, how did you come up with the gene pool that you surveyed for this?
Yeah, very interesting. We essentially took a random dip into all of the businesses that are registered on CCR, so it's a pretty representative sample of all small businesses that are CCR registered. And then we asked, we can look from federal procurement data on what of those businesses have actually had contracts, and then so that was our sample pool.
You, cool. You surveyed more than 1,500, which is a nice, hefty number.
That's right. That's right. And a mixture of those, as I said, who are active contractors and those who are inactive, meaning they're registered on CCR and they've performed once or twice but are not as currently engaged in a contract, because we wanted to see what some of the differences were.
Cool. I was wondering about the source, and I'm glad I remembered to ask. So the last question from the first part of the study, getting on GSA can be another way to ensure procurement success. What kind of success are the small companies finding through GSA schedules?
Well, what was interesting is we were, again, asking what some of the activities were that they were doing to try to get on, to get federal business. And, you know, one of the activities was getting on the GSA schedule. We did not ask specifically about what percentage of their business or their revenues had come from a GSA schedule contract versus another competitively bid contract. But the fact that women business owners were far more likely, 40% of them say they've gotten on the GSA schedule versus 31% of men, that was just very curious to me as to why perhaps that's happening. I don't know, Judy, if you have any insights from the clients that you've had, if it's a matter of the kinds of businesses that they have that are more readily able to put goods and services up on the schedule, or if it's something that, you know, here's my price, take it or leave it, or I'm not sure exactly, but it was a very curious finding.
It really made me wonder myself, and I had a couple of thoughts, and Julia, it may very well be that Open's interested in doing another wave of research, so that got me thinking about what questions for next time. But here's my thoughts on a couple of this. It may partly be the seeing some of the other research on what makes women business owners tick. One of those characteristics I think you and I have both seen in that kind of research over the years is that women business owners do their homework more, and they are more likely to go cautiously into something and research and figure out, well, what's the machinery? How does this work? What do I have to do in order to go and play this game? And so the rules for GSA schedule contracting are more structured. There's more information out there. There's 8 hours of online training about how to go play the GSA schedule game available for free right now, right off the GSA site, leaving aside the hundreds of other people offering that kind of education. So it may be that the structure and the readily accessible, well-structured information about GSA schedule contracting may be one reason why it makes it more attractive for women who typically are also got a lot of irons in the fire and don't have a lot of time. So what can they do that they can research easily? The second thing may be, it makes me wonder whether women business owners are involved in commercial off-the-shelf stuff and that is more readily adaptable. That's what you find on GSA schedule contracts. So I don't know the answer about the breakdown between what the women business owners are typically into and whether or not that's different from the men. But it also tells me that you've got to have at least 2 years of experience typically before you can get a GSA schedule. And that makes me wonder whether the women are coming into the government market with more experience to start with. And so it makes me wonder whether or not their trip up the growth curve is actually steeper.
Mm-hmm. You're quite right that this first study opened up a lot of questions. And that was certainly one of them in my mind. And I'm definitely have my fingers crossed and feel confident that the Open folks are as curious about some of these questions as we are, and so I would expect that next year they're going to do a follow-up study.
Cool.
So any questions, I guess I'll put this out to the your listening audience. As we're talking about these results, if it opens up a question in your mind, send me an email at jweeks@womenable.com with any ideas that you have. What should we ask about in the second year survey?
Cool. Yeah, and you can, again, you can find, if you don't remember the email address, womenable.com is the homepage, and Judy's is summitinsight.com. The second part of the study deals with women and minority federal business contractors. Mm-hmm. And you got, again, four quick facts here. But what do you think there is at least sort of a level playing field for women or minority contractors in this market?
This study uncovered the fact that once business owners are in the procurement arena, they've got one or two contracts under their belt and they're, you know, now considered kind of active in the federal procurement game, the playing field is relatively level, you know, from the results of this survey. However, it's sort of like that whole Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers thing with women having to dance backwards and in high heels, and in this case, it's the minority business owners that are having to invest more time and money to reach that same level of success. So they're the ones that are dancing backwards. And for women and men, there's not much of a difference by gender in terms of success once they're active contractors. However, when you're looking at that pool of business owners who are still knocking on the door, still at the starting gate, they are far more likely to be women business owners and to be women to be minority business owners. So they, there still is something going on that's preventing entry into federal procurement for women and for minorities.
Julie, one of the things that fascinated me about the difference between what women-owned companies and minority-owned companies are spending their time and effort on is the difference that women business owners are about 10% or 12% more likely to have GSA schedules as a primary tactic for success, while minority-owned companies are investing much more heavily, between 15 and 30% more likely to be participating in relationship-based marketing. And
yeah,
you had
absolutely.
Mentioned things like agency briefings, small business outreach sessions, choruses, seminars, and calls on the agencies themselves. I mean, that tracks with the anecdotal research I did for my book. But a hypothesis to test for next time. Because government contracting is so very relationship intensive, that makes me wonder whether, even though minority business owners are getting a slower start up to the first win, whether that investment in relationships, because it takes longer, but whether minority business owners are poised to rocket up a steeper growth curve over the next few years as their investment in those relationships matures, because it takes time. That's one of the things people forget about. And that makes me wonder whether minority business owners decide that if they come into this very traditional market without the outsider connections and old boys network, then whether or not they dig deeper into a cultural heritage, their own cultural heritage that encourage collaboration and reach back into their own sense of community, as well as simply working harder at making up for a perceived lack of connections.
Mm-hmm. I would like to think that that's true, that this investment that they're making, and it's very, I'm glad you called this out, because business owners of color are far more likely to be engaged in those relationship-building processes, you know, either because they know that that's what it takes or that they don't have the role models, the networks that the majority business owners have that might help them do that. But I'd like to think that investment is going to pay off, and that would be something very definitely to keep track of, that this investment that they're making in building relationships is going to pay off further down the line, or is it that they're having to work harder to get the same level of success? It could be one, the other, or a combination.
And it may be a difference in comfort level as well. Gee, I need to find out something. Let's ask a friend. Let's go ask around. Maybe it's that a trust level is different when you get it from another human. I mean, when I interviewed Martin Sines, president of Sines by Sines, Deborah Stallings, president of HR and New, Carolyn Sawyer, the Tom Sawyer Company, they all won their first contracts through those relationships.
And that's a good place to wrap this segment. My first book, Government Marketing Best Practices, first line of the first book, was this market, any market, is all about relationships. It's not just the government market. But until you establish relationships, you're really not going to go anywhere in any market. You have to be known. People are comfortable with buying from people that they actually know. My guests today are Julie Weeks, who is the CEO of Womenable and the author of the American Express Study. You can find her at womenable.com, and Judy Bratt, the CEO of Summit Insight and the author of Making Government Contracts Easier. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. The diets of American youth have a lot to be desired, in part because they're filled with empty calories.
That includes things like cakes, cookies, pies.
That's Dr. Jill Reedy, a nutritionist with the National Cancer Institute.
Nearly 40% of total calories consumed by 2 to 18-year-olds were in the form of what we call empty calories from solid fats and from added sugars. More specifically, sugar-sweetened beverages, which include soda and fruit drinks, combined provided almost 10% of total calories.
To learn more about empty calories and get tips to help children maintain a healthy weight, visit the website wecan.nhlbi.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
With the announcement from the Office of Management and Budget on cloud computing as the default approach to IT, the Cloud First policy is expected to reduce the federal government's more than 2,000 data centers by 40%. Join Afcea Bethesda and Dave McClure from GSA for a panel discussion on the Federal Data Center Consolidation Initiative and the expanded use of cloud computing with federal IT officers from Energy, State, Interior, and NIST at the Bethesda North Marriott on January 13th. To register today, visit afceabethesda.org/janbreakfast.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Julie Weeks, who is the CEO of WomenAble.com and the author of the study we've been discussing, the American Express Open Study on Small Businesses and Government Contracting. My other guest in studio with me is Judy Bratt, CEO of Summit Insight, and the author of Government Contracts Made Easier, which is just out. This was a three-part study. The last part is subcontracting and teaming. The last part of the last segment was about relationships. So one does not just walk up, knock on the door of Northrop Grumman or General Dynamics and say, yo, small business here, let's partner. What occurs here? How does one develop these relationships?
That's probably a question that's as much or more for Judy than it is for me, but let me open it by saying that the small businesses that are the most successful in federal contracting are not going it alone. In addition to winning some prime sole contracts, they are teaming up with other small businesses, and they're also performing as subcontractors. So, you know, those strategies are extremely important for building procurement success. So, Judy, how does somebody knock on the door of a Northrop Grumman?
I can tell you how you don't knock on a door and hope the door is going to open. And that's to say, I may insert flavor of small business. Where's my contract? And an appalling number of businesses, that's their entree. If you want a prime contractor to return your call and you're courting them, you say, we've just been over to see Federal Law Enforcement Training Center or whatever they are, and they say they're going to die if they don't have what we've got. Want to talk? That is the kind of thing that will get your call returned. Bring business is the single biggest thing that prime contractor small business liaisons say is critical when you want to open a door to a teaming relationship. That leads to proposals and a lot of other things, but bring business is the number one thing you got to do.
What kind of venues are we talking about for contractors, especially new small business contractors, to meet any of these people? I mean, they have to be able to identify the people they need to leave the messages for.
They do. And the first thing, again, is to do your homework and figure out which prime contractors you want to court. That tells me, and that comes back to which agencies does your product or service fit. So when you start out by knowing what you do in your sweet spot is knowing which agencies need you, then you go to usaspending.gov and say, well, which contractors, prime contractors are doing business with those agencies, and which, especially if they're large primes, which divisions of those prime contractors should I be approaching? I mean, saying, I want to do business with Raytheon. That's nice. What part? The Ray part? Not good. You've got to focus really tightly. And then see, where are representatives from those companies? Where are they showing up? Which industry associations do they belong to? I just got back from a function that was held by the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association, for example. Maybe your domain relates to records management. Going to the domain-specific technical conferences where both the primes and the agencies show up is one very good way to at least start those relationships. And you can also look at business matchmaking, which is another one of the partners that the Victory and Procurement Program is working with to help facilitate those kinds of relationships. So an association you belong to may be hosting a business matchmaking conference. Groups like the Women's Business Enterprise National Council, WeBank, also routinely host matchmaking functions for certified women business owners. So look for those. But all those matchmaking and door openers are going to be most effective when you've come with targeted ideas about how you and that prime can work together.
Julie, in the third part of the study, what are the tips that come to top of mind for you that showed up in the study?
Interestingly, what it showed is that acting as a subcontractor seems to precede teaming. And subcontracting is sort of a form of teaming, but for those who might not be familiar, I mean, subcontracting is you're a smaller business and you're providing a piece of a contract to a larger business who is the one who's winning the contract. So you're just doing a slice of whatever the requirement of that contract is. Teaming, on the other hand, is kind of a meeting of co-equals. You and similar other small businesses that are complementary in some way are banding together to collectively go after business. And so one of the insights that was gained from this analysis of the survey was that it looked like small business owners are doing subcontracting, pursuing it, and performing it before they're getting involved in teaming. And it could be, you know, because they haven't met some of the other potential collaborators yet, because teaming is a very special sort of a thing. You have to have a level of trust with another small business owner. But subcontracting precedes teaming. And if you do either or both of those things, your likelihood of generating a much higher level of business revenue and profitability goes up quite a bit. So they're very, very successful strategies.
And teaming and subcontracting are both tremendously important. I mean, 76% of successful small businesses, from what you, from the research that you found, Julie, said that they pursued teaming as well. And even though only 54% of them actually generated revenue from those efforts, the stat that I found even more critical, and that a lot of small companies forget because they all go after the big guys, is that 62% of successful small business contractors teamed with other small businesses. That opens up a whole other tactic that is often overlooked by new small business entrants into the marketplace, because small teaming can reflect the value of knowing how to leverage the relaxed rules that apply to affiliations between small businesses that can establish qualified joint ventures that can give them access to creating a bigger entity than they could actually pursue if they were going after business on their own. But you also have to know the rules that let you create a bigger entity out of two small businesses and still stay on the right side of the size standards and regulations.
Okay, we're running out of time here. So, Julie, what other studies does Women Able have coming down the pike right now? Anything?
Well, I'm working right now on an interesting project that's actually a six-country study looking at gender, small business, and innovation, and that's for UNCTAD, the UN Conference on Trade and Development, going to see how women and men business owners differ in the way they approach innovation in terms of products, processes, and marketing. So I guess that's the one coming up next that's going to be interesting. And I do believe also I'll be involved with American Express Open's Victory and Procurement Program and probably doing another follow-up survey. So, again, any of your listeners out there, if you've got ideas for what you'd like to have covered in the next survey, send me an email.
jweeks@womenable.com. Please do that. Mm-hmm. Judy, final thoughts here.
It's really important, I think, to also contribute to the community that you want to build. And One of the ways that that I'm going to be doing that in the year to come is doing a one-day benefit for the Wounded Warrior Project on February 11th, a strategy in a day. And all the proceeds from that are going to Wounded Warrior Project. And you can find out more about that contacting me via summitinsight.com.
There you go. My thanks to both of you for joining me today. Julie, please keep me apprised on any new studies coming down the pike, because we'll do what we...
No, I will.
We will help you publicize same. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today have been Julie Weeks, CEO of WomenAble.com, and Judy Bratt, who is the CEO of SummitInsight.com, and whose new book, Government Contracts Made Easier, is available at your favorite online venue today. This is not my day job. You can check out my new book, Selling to the Government. It's available at Amazon, all of the online stores, and it's available also at Barnes & Noble. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off-center with AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
The underlying battle is trying to lay out the framework for how we're going to deliver services over the internet without saturating the backbone, and do it in a way that you don't censor the internet, which is what net neutrality is getting at, but simply try to moderate bandwidth in a way which is fair.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Attention. If you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a six-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now, Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-400-7910 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue your current eating habits. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-400-7910. That's 1-800-400-7910. 1-800-400-7910.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com.